The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life, drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. Well, I must say that we have received so many new listeners from my article that was published in Law of Attraction magazine that I want to say welcome to each and every one of you. The article was titled Path to Prosperity, and I talked about Todd Silva's Give Away a Dollar a Day program, and it was very well received. Anyway, I just want to mention that if you have not seen the beautiful print copy of Law of Attraction magazine, go to lawofattractionmag.com and get on their digital subscription list. Or better yet, get the hard copy magazine in a store near you. The new issue is coming out on July 24th, I believe, and you can find it in Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Ralph's, all the grocery stores. Just check it out. You will love what you see. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about a new paradigm in doing business. Yes, we definitely have shifted in the way we do business. You know, I hear cries from people all the time that they don't have a job or they can't get a part-time job. But could it be that they're looking on the outside for income? Perhaps it's time to look at your creativity to create a way for you and your family to gain the financial freedom of being an entrepreneur. After all, we live in an abundant universe. And if you tap into that creativity, you will discover that there is something that you know which will fill the need in our society. And only you can fill that. Today, it's not about getting that big corporate job. It's about creating an opportunity for you to become your own boss. You see, the new paradigm is not relying on exterior jobs to provide what you need. It's about creating the opportunities in which you thrive. So what's stopping you from creating a business today? Is it thoughts about health insurance, dental insurance, 401k, etc.? Well, perhaps in this new paradigm, the need for health or dental insurance is just not there. You see, we create our own reality and our own health. But what if, you say, what if we get cancer? Well, if you create the cancer, then you can heal the cancer. If we're worried about catching a disease or we're worried about dying, well, hey, let me tell you, we're all dying. It's just a part of life. All you need to remember is that you create your reality. I think insurance is a mafia game. They are banking, or should I say, they are making money on you based upon the failure of your health or your car accident or the building burning down, which, truthfully, hardly ever happens. Knowing the law of attraction, isn't paying out money just in case something may go wrong actually taking an action step for the thing to actually come into your life? Well, just think about it. I know people who are much healthier for not having health insurance because they're taking responsibility for their own health. The same thing goes for car insurance. They're better drivers because they know that they are personally responsible if something happens to them, their car, or another person. The same thing goes for building insurance or flood insurance. To me, insurance is a big racket and absolutely not necessary. I believe that the day is coming when people will simply cease to buy these things, and then their individual freedom will bloom in more ways than one. Last week, I was talking to our friend Eric Altman, And we were talking about the homeless people that he visits every single night. He said he is there to help those who are in misery, but there are so many more people that are homeless that are actually very happy. Yeah, that's right. When they're homeless, some people experience the freedom that they never felt before, free of worry about paying those bills, paying that insurance, paying that mortgage. And on a spiritual level, those homeless people know that in some way, all of their needs will be met. They are, in fact, experiencing what many gurus have said all along. Like, if you take a trip and you only have $5 with you, you will notice that when the $5 is gone, the universe provides incredible opportunities for you to not only survive, but thrive. It just depends if you can see the opportunities that are flowing to you. So again, some of the homeless are the most spiritually enlightened people you will ever come across. They understand about trusting the universe. That's why they came to the planet. And perhaps that's why you came to the planet as well. It's time that you let go to the old way of thinking and start looking into creating and becoming that entrepreneur that you came here to experience. So tonight we are talking to Riz Virk, who wrote the book Zen Entrepreneurship, Walking the Path of a Career Warrior. So sit back, relax, kick up your feet, and tune in as we are talking about the spiritual connection and the new paradigm of doing business right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
The secret to all wealth, prosperity, joy, and abundance boils down to self-love and sustained focus. That's what it's all about. But how does one go about creating this mindset? It's actually simpler than you think. World-renowned Law of Attraction Master Harrison Klein will show you the same easy steps that celebrities, professionals, and millionaires use. You will be amazed as you begin to live your grandest dreams. Not certain of this? Remove all doubt for only a dollar. Yes, that's right. Only $1. It's a no-brainer. Go to HarrisonKleinInternational.com/dream and start rocking your world today. That's HarrisonKleinInternational.com/dream.
Hi, I'm Sue Elliott, Editor-in-Chief of Law of Attraction Magazine. I would love to introduce you to the magazine so you can manifest the life of your dreams. You'll find powerful wisdom, insights, and easy techniques inside every issue of Law of Attraction magazine. And it's available right now, digitally and on most newsstands. Visit lawofattractionmag.com to purchase your online copy today. That's Law of Attraction, MAG.com.
Law of Attraction magazine is not associated with Law of Attraction Radio Network. It's here. Our wealth creation cruise was a huge success. Now you can have these powerful workshops for your very own. You will learn life-changing strategies about creating wealth from the top LOA wealth experts. Plus, you'll also receive the Jewels Money Activation Hypnosis CD. Get your copies now at lawofattractioncruise.com.
Okay, we are back. Real fast, I just want to let everyone know that Eric Altman is coming back to my show on August 1st, and it's going to be a live show. If you want a personal healing from Eric or just to ask him a question, now is your opportunity. The date for this live show is Thursday, August 1st at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. And if you want the phone number to call in for this live show, go to loaradionetwork.com and sign up for an email update. I will make sure you get the information. This is going to be so much fun. I haven't done a live show in about 5 years, so I'm so looking forward to really talking with you and Eric at the same time. Eric and I talked over the phone for a few hours the other night, and I've got to say, he just kept me laughing. What an amazing person he is. And don't forget, if you want to spend 3 glorious and powerful healing days with Eric on October 4th, go to lawofattractioncruise.com and put it in your deposit now. I'm so excited about this cruise. It is going to be so powerful. So join Eric and myself by going to lawofattractioncruise.com. But let's get back to tonight's message. Being an entrepreneur is an inside job. It starts and stops with your creation. How far do you want to go? How much do you want to make? It's all up to you. It's total and complete freedom because you are making the decisions. You become the master of your destiny. So tonight I've invited this brilliant man by the name of Rizwan Virk, a graduate of MIT and Stanford University. He's a well-known entrepreneur, author, independent film producer, and an angel investor in Silicon Valley. He worked with Foster Gamble in producing the wonderful movie called Thrive. It's no wonder that he's the author of Zen Entrepreneurship, Walking the Path of the Career Warrior, because he totally understands the spiritual connection with being an entrepreneur. Welcome, Riz, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here.
This is such a wonderful, wonderful message to get out, because I know that you were involved as executive producer of the Thrive movie, which happens to be my favorite. You did a great job on that. We've interviewed Foster many times. So I can see where you would have this new way of thinking about business, about success, because there is a brand new paradigm coming to the forefront now. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think people are starting to recognize that there's a different way of looking at, you know, both our work and business in general. And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why the book is doing so well at this point in time. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I got involved with the film Thrive with Foster and Kimberly. You know, they were really looking to bring their message out to the world. And at that point in time, the book is about my first entrepreneurial journey. So I had many startups, but by that point I was doing investing in other entrepreneurs. And I see filmmakers as, you know, kinds of entrepreneurs who are trying to take their product out to the marketplace. And so I was very happy to be involved in that and help get that message out there.
Oh, it was a great movie. You did a great job on that. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, you know, this book came from a reflection over my own entrepreneurial journey. So the book is a story of my very first startup. I was fresh out of MIT, 23 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. And you know, I started a company with my college roommate, a software company, and to be honest, at that point, I wasn't really that interested in spiritual development, meditation, you know, spiritual growth, Tibetan dream yoga, all these things that I get to in the book. All I really wanted to do was make money. You know, I grew up lower middle class in Detroit, and I had just graduated, and we wanted to make this company successful, and I thought, hey, if this stuff can help me, you know, to make my company more successful, sure, I'll go ahead with it. But as I got into, you know, more of the spiritual exercises and practices and ways of viewing work as a form of meditation, that these two paths really started to bleed together. And by the end, I began to see my work really as an external manifestation of my inner state. And what happened with my business was, at one point, it got really big. We had raised millions of dollars in venture capital. And at that point, we hit a wall. And upon reflection and going over it with my mentor at the time, I realized that the wall we had hit with the business was the exact same issues that I was dealing with in my own personal growth, what I call my personal energetic pattern. And my pattern was that I'd like to jump into something, you know, go at it full bore for a little while, and then I'd get bored and I'd want to jump into the next thing, and then I'd want to jump into the next thing. And this pattern had occurred several times throughout my life at that point in high school and college, and now it was happening in my business. And the business was actually starting, we started with the first product, which was successful, then we jumped into the second product, then we jumped into the third product, then we jumped into the services group. We were just doing too many things. And this was a direct reflection of my own internal energetic pattern. And so in order to really help the business along, I had to find ways to transcend that pattern. And I talk about the energetic pattern a lot in the book because it encompasses both our strengths and our weaknesses. In this case, part of my strength was that I could jump into something new and learn it really well. That's why I became an entrepreneur in the first place. But it was holding me back. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, upon reflecting on that whole experience and all of the things that I had learned about using your work as meditation and about bringing these two paths together, you know, that really led me to write this book so that others can use it to help find their own unique path in life and be successful by understanding their own energetic patterns.
This is great. So you started your business when you were 23. May I ask how old you are now?
Sure. So I'm a bit older now. That was back in the early 90s when I graduated. So I'm in my 40s now. So I've had plenty of time to reflect on that. And then I also over time, as I said, I've become an investor and mentor to other entrepreneurs. And I started to see, you know, similar types of things happening with their own energetic patterns, which were different from mine. And a lot of times they were caught in kind of like that movie Groundhog Day. Did you ever see that with Bill Murray?
Yeah, oh, yes.
They were doing the same thing over and over again, and they didn't realize it.
So that's basically what keeps people stuck, because they're not exploring out. I mean, did you get to the point where you felt that there's got to be something more?
Yeah, you know, I definitely did. And I think that's, you know, really what the book is about, is by starting to see your own pattern more clearly, you can start to find ways to transcend it. And I like to, you know, compare the mind to, you know, those little snow globes. When you shake up the snow globe, the snow is everywhere and you can't really see mm-hmm. what's inside. But once you let the snow settle, you can see very clearly what's happening. And I think that's the first step that a lot of people miss. They're too busy saying, hey, what do I do to make, you know, X million dollars, or to become a stock market investor, to become a film producer. But I think it always starts with a bit of self-knowledge and taking stock of where we are. And, you know, there's a great Chinese proverb about dragons, and I like to compare energetic patterns to dragons. And it goes like this, and you may have heard it before. It says that if you ignore the dragon, then it will feed on you. If you try to confront the dragon directly, then it will defeat you. But if you learn to ride the dragon, you can take advantage of its might and its power.
Mm.
And our energetic patterns are like that. If we can learn to ride them, then we can transcend them. We can sort of let go of the things that are causing these patterns within us. And that's what leads us to something greater, to a greater part of ourselves that wants to be more successful in life, both financially but in other ways, in terms of doing meaningful work. And I think that's, you know, really what the goal of the book is, to get people to walk their own unique path.
And how do people know when they are stuck in their ego? Isn't that what makes people miserable, is that they become nervous, anxious, and sad because they don't know really the reason why they are projecting out what they're projecting out? I mean, they're doing it for power. They're doing it for, not really for the spiritual, but for the ego.
Yeah, that's often the case. And, you know, if you look at the yogic traditions, you know, which I've studied, they define the mind and the body as a series of these clear sheets or bubbles, which are called koshas in Sanskrit. And that as we go through life, we develop imperfections in these clear sheets. And they get very muddy and they start to get warped and shaped by these imperfections, which are called samskaras. And so the process of a spiritual practice like meditation, like yoga, or even just learning to clear your mind by going to a place in nature where you can start to let go, allows you to see more clearly. It's like having a muddy windshield, right? You're going through this process. You're telling yourself these stories. Even as an entrepreneur, this is often the case, because we're so busy trying to convince people we have the greatest new product, or the greatest new service that we're going to offer to the world, that we don't always see clearly what's really happening around us and what the cause and effect relationship is. And if we can do that, that's very much, you know, the first step in learning how to transcend these stories and to get beyond the ego, to get to that higher part of ourselves.
Mm.
And in the book, I talk about using the seven types of clues as ways for us to figure out how to navigate in life. So rather than navigating from our patterns, which a lot of us do instinctively, this is a way to tap into inner guidance without necessarily having to be able to speak to your spirit guides or getting that abstract about it. You know, I'm a very practical guy in the business world, but really looking for these clues that appear in the environment around us and appear in our body, and using those as a new type of system to navigate, you know, through kind of the treacherous waters of the business world.
Okay, so you're talking about being able to receive or to see the opportunities or to see through a clear mind without any of the distractions, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. And that's, you know, why I advocate, you know, a practice of some type of meditation. And in fact, in the book, I talk about using your work as meditation. Rather, you know, in addition to just, say, some kind of sitting meditation. And, you know, what I mean by that is, if you look at the practice of meditation, usually starts off as concentration. You're concentrating on a specific energy center in the body, perhaps, or you're concentrating on your breath or the present moment or an external object or a picture like a mandala or a spiritual being that you're visualizing. And what happens is that the mind naturally gets distracted, right? So we start to think about what we're going to have for lunch, or that big party we have to plan this weekend, right? Or the thing we should have said to that guy in the meeting as a clever retort, you know, when they insulted our work, but we didn't really think of it at the time. So the mind starts to think about all these things, and really the practice of meditation in the early days is about bringing the mind back to the center, and as you do that, you exercise this muscle of attention. And eventually the goal is awareness, but like I said, it starts off as concentration. So one of the things that I advocate is that at work, you can do the same process. Sigmund Freud once said that life consists mostly of work and love. And, you know, one of my mentors said, well, if you add up the hours, life consists mostly of work and sleep, right?
Oh, yeah.
8 hours doing one and 8 hours doing the other, or how many ever hours you spend. Then there's a little bit of time left over for love and everything else. But numerically speaking, those are the biggest chunks. And if you can learn to utilize those two chunks, and I'm happy to talk about, you know, dream yoga later, but at work, what you can do is you can choose the task and say you have some data entry to do. It could be a mindless task, or it could be something that requires a lot more concentration, like solving a particular problem. But if you take a period of time, say an hour or two, to work just on this task, what will naturally happen is that you will get distracted. Right. Again, you'll start to think about lunch or the next meeting or the next party. And this book took place in the 90s when email was new. And so, you know, email was a new distraction at that point. But now we have so many distractions. We have SMS text messages. We have Facebook feeds. We have, you know, Twitter accounts. We've got Instagram. We've got so many different ways to get distracted in addition to the traditional ways at work, that anytime one of those happens, you can bring your mind back to the task at hand. You can acknowledge it, just like you might acknowledge an errant thought, and say, okay, I'm going to focus now on this task at hand and get back to it. And you're exercising the same muscle of attention by being mindful, but by concentrating. And you're actually doing what I like to call a warrior's task. And a warrior's task is when you have an obvious purpose to something, but then you have a hidden purpose. And the hidden purpose here is to train your mind. Kind of like that old 80s movie. You can probably tell I grew up in the 80s. I'll use a lot of various movie references. But the movie Karate Kid.
Oh, yes.
So in that movie, the teacher, Mr. Miyagi, you know, is teaching the student Daniel karate. And he says, you know, he gets him to do these chores, paint the fence and wax the floor. And eventually Daniel gets mad at him and says, you're supposed to be teaching me karate, not having me do these everyday chores. But in fact, by doing these everyday chores, he was training Daniel's muscles to be able to block a kick or a punch in karate and to make that instinctive. And that's really what a warrior's task is all about. It may be about entering data into the spreadsheet, or it may be about you know, taking care of those phone calls or doing those sales calls. But you're also training your mind, which is, and the muscles of attention in your mind. And those come in useful, you know, when you're trying to manifest later or when you're trying to be more aware and look for clues.
Tell us, what do you think the difference is between the law of attraction, creative visualization, or the secret as to what you are talking about in your book?
Sure. And so there's obviously a lot of similarities. I'm a big believer in, you know, the law of attraction and the secret and creative visualization. And, you know, that tradition goes back to the 20s or even earlier, you know, when Andrew Carnegie commissioned Napoleon Hill to write that first book of Think and Grow Rich. And I like to say that it's important we understand the four keys of manifestation. And I think too often people concentrate on one or two keys, and they're not thinking about all four keys. So it's a way of kind of understanding, you know, how the process works and understanding, you know, when it's not working. I mean, if we think at a high level of creative visualization and law of attraction as being a much more practical way of asking, right? And, you know, you have that old biblical term, if you ask, you shall receive. But sometimes we ask and we don't receive right away. Right? So there's sometimes complexities in that process. And so the first key that I like to talk about is right intent. And that is, in fact, figuring out, setting your intention by using creative visualization, by visualizing your goal. And I encourage people to write down, you know, these scenarios that they may see in their minds, and to set forces in motion. And that's talked about a lot. And I think that's a very important part of the process. One of the things that's important there, though, is sometimes rather than simply creating an image of what we want, we may want to let that image come to us. And because then it's a lot easier to hold that image in our minds and to create a thought form, which we will send out that will then attract all of the circumstances and people to us that will help us to manifest our goals. And that involves listening as well as asking. So the first key I like is called right intent, which I think, you know, many of us are familiar with.
Mm-hmm. But let me ask you, if we examine this in our mind, I mean, it's the first time I'm really putting together, there's a different scenarios of what we want. Do we need to be visualizing that to see what the possible outcome would be if we went, or what our intention would deliver, or do we even get to that point?
Well, you know, you can do it different ways. I mean, you can have an intent that you set out that's a general direction, right, that you want, or you could have a specific goal that you're trying to achieve. But, you know, I like to say that, you know, there's this process of giving and receiving. It's like a dance, right? So I like to send out kind of the general intention of where I want to go, and then I like to wait to see an image of where I might be in the future that is one of the probable futures that I would really like to focus on, and then I would put energy behind that image. But sometimes there's a matter of timing, and so the second, third, this is where the second, third, and fourth keys come into play. So the second key is what I call right patterns, and that's understanding, you know, your own hopes, dreams, fears, what I talked about earlier with the energetic pattern. And if you're the type of person that has, you know, tried to create things before, and sometimes it's worked and sometimes it's not, you know, this gets back to understanding how your energy works and manifests itself. I like to say if something happens three times, then it's a pattern. And by understanding our patterns, we can then get to what I call the third key of manifestation, which is right technique. And that is, no matter what we want to achieve, right, it would be nice if we could just sit back, visualize it, and then just have it come to us. But again, we live in the real 3D world, and so we have to work through those structures to get there. And so choosing the right technique, I mean, if you wanted to be a stock market investor or as I said earlier, a Hollywood producer or an entrepreneur with a big company, well, part of the problem is that there are actually too many techniques out there. There's lots of techniques you can read on how to buy real estate, how to get into films, how to start a company. The problem is finding the one that works for you to get you in the direction that you're looking to go. And I'll give you a great example of this. I was, you know, when I was writing my first book, I attended a talk by this Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Isabel Allende, at Berkeley. And somebody asked her, well, how can I write my first novel? And, you know, she gave some very good advice. She said, she gave a very specific technique that was a great technique for her. She said, well, if you write a page a day, then at the end of the year, you have 365 pages. And that's enough material for a novel. You could then spend the next 6 to 12 months revising that, and you've got your first novel. And I thought, wow, what a great technique. So I went home and tried it. And you know what? It didn't work for me. It didn't work well at all. Turns out it was a great technique, but it wasn't the right technique for my energetic pattern. I just can't write a page a day, every day. What I could do is write 10 pages in one day and then not write anything for 3 weeks and then write a whole chapter in a day, right? Because my pattern was very different. And so understanding where how our energy naturally flows is an important part of the manifestation process, because then you know, we're traveling downhill rather than going uphill against obstacles to achieve our goals in life.
Let's take a short commercial break, and we will be back with Riz Virk from Zen Entrepreneurship. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com. Need help realizing your dreams? As a hypnotherapist specializing in the Law of Attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
The power of the I Am is yours at loaaffirmations.com. Bringing you the very best in audio affirmations programs and introducing our newest title, I Am Happy, Healthy, and Wealthy. All of the LOAaffirmations.com programs are MP3 instant downloads and come with multiple audio and subliminal tracks. Order yours today at LOAaffirmations.com.
Okay, so let's talk about the energetic patterns. How do we understand our personal energetic pattern without going into years of psychotherapy?
Well, I think a little bit of self-reflection, you know, is quite helpful in this regard. And if we want to understand our energetic patterns, sometimes all we have to do is look out at the world, or maybe have somebody help us, and say what has occurred repeatedly in our lives. And if something has occurred three times in a similar arc or path, then it's reflective of something in the inner pattern. So, for example, I was on a radio show the other day, and this woman said that she would get into these business relationships, and she'd jump in really quickly because they were saying all the right things, and then she'd have problems, and she wouldn't be able to get out of these business relationships easily. And this had happened multiple times. And I said, well, you're clearly onto a pattern here, right? An external pattern. The external pattern is a reflection of the internal pattern. So there's something going on with her energy field and her way of making decisions. That's really kind of the link between the internal and the external, is that we're instinctively making decisions. And she was making a decision to jump into a new business relationship because of what they were saying. And, you know, one of the types of clues that I talk about in the book, and we can talk more about, you know, clues and using your life as a treasure hunt in a minute, but is the bodily sensation. And sometimes, you know, we're talking to somebody and they're saying the right things, but afterwards we clench up inside.
Right.
Negative clue that's telling us something, our intuition is telling us something is wrong. In her case, it may have been the opposite. It may be that the energy was flowing and she got really excited and she's ready to jump in. And I said, notice that sensation in your body, that something is happening in your energy field. And when you notice that sensation, you then take a deep breath. And rather than simply doing what seems to occur naturally, but is really our pattern reasserting itself, you step back and then you say, okay, let me, you know, wait a day or two, and then let me take a half step. So you actually implement something that counteracts the pattern that you have. So in this case, you might say, let's get into a business relationship for a month and see how it goes. Right? So there's an internal side about breathing and recognizing energy in the body, and then there's an external side, a very practical side, and I like to always marry the internal and the external and say you have to work on both.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant.
So it takes a little bit of self-reflection sometimes, but it can be done. And sometimes people are like, I just want the steps A, B, and C, but sometimes it really just takes, you know, looking back at what has happened with a clearer mind.
Recognizing those gut feelings could be telling you that perhaps you're insecure or perhaps you're depending upon another. There's so many messages that could come up that you need to understand. Taking that break for a day or two or even a week before making a final decision is very smart.
Yeah, I think that's a great practical set of advice for people. Once they start to recognize their external patterns, things that have happened repeatedly, then you start to examine your internal patterns, which is how do you feel when you're making these decisions. I remember one point, this was a while ago, but in one company I wrote down, you know, every single decision I made and said, this is, you know, how I'm feeling about it. And then I began to recognize these different types of clues in the body itself. And they were clues to things like your fears and your insecurities. And sometimes people aren't willing to do this. So I had an entrepreneur whose company I invested in once, and he went through this cycle where he would get a new investor or advisor. They would come into his company, and they would be usually pretty accomplished people. They would have a great honeymoon period where he would take all the advice of this new advisor, and he would talk about how great he is, and then inevitably something would go wrong, as it always does in business and with any startup. And then he would turn around, rather than taking responsibility for it, he would blame this new advisor and say, well, it's all his fault that this happened, right? Because I was just taking his advice. And then they would have a falling out, and then they would never talk to each other again. And this happened like 3-4 times in a row. And, you know, he wasn't willing to accept that there was a pattern going on there because he always wanted to blame the other person. And you know, I gave him some slack until I saw that it happened so many times in a row. And that's, I think, if he was willing to examine his feelings at that point when he takes the advice, right, he would have been able to more clearly see what was happening.
Wow. That is brilliant. I love it. I love it. So talk about the treasure hunt. What are the clues? I mean, you just said that the clues are your emotional feelings that bubble up.
Yep.
But are there other clues?
Yeah. So there's different types of clues. So, you know, I believe that we can use our lives and more specifically our careers as a treasure hunt. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the old Indiana Jones films. I don't know if you've ever seen those, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And
oh, of course, of course. I just love how you're putting in these movies, how great. Really, we can identify exactly what you're saying. So continue.
Yeah, so in those films, there's always a treasure at the end, whether it's the Ark of the Covenant or it's the Holy Grail that they're searching for. But they don't know exactly where it is. And so they have to follow a series of clues to get there. Now, it would be nice if the clues came all at once, but usually they don't. Usually we get one clue at a time, and we have to follow that clue. We have to take a step in that direction, and then the next clue will be revealed to us, and then the next clue will be revealed to us after that. And I believe we can view our careers as a treasure hunt, and these clues are happening all the time, again, if we can learn to notice them. And so, you know, the most sort of famous type of clue is what, you know, Carl Jung termed a synchronicity. That is when you are thinking about something internally and then something happens externally that relates to that without there being a real causal relationship between the two, or at least a logical one that you can see. And the simplest form of this, of course, is something that's happened to all of us where we're thinking about someone we haven't thought about in a while, and then they email us or they call us. Right? There's no direct logical relationship, but there is an intuitive relationship between the two. And usually that's a clue that we may want to do something with that person. Another clue is sort of this funny feeling that we get when we see something out in the world. That something could be an errant phrase. So, for example, a few years ago, a friend of mine was trying to buy a house in Arizona, and she had looked at many, many places, and she just couldn't find one that felt right, and she was down on the process, and she saw a bumper sticker that on a car in front of her that said, "Not all those who wander are lost." And she said, "Oh, that's an interesting one." And then she kind of forgot about it, and then she was browsing a website and she saw the same phrase again. It said, "Not all those who wander are lost." And then she saw it yet a third time somewhere else. And it's when you see something repeatedly, that's when it goes from being just a regular coincidence to a clue. And clues are very personalized. And she actually came to me and said, "Do you know what this is from?" And I said, "Well, it sounds like that this poem from The Lord of the Rings, that not all that is gold glitters and not all those who wander are lost." But she didn't necessarily know that. She wasn't even a fan of fantasy. But it had a message for her about her home search, which had been on her mind, which was that it's okay not to buy a house, that it's okay to have these temporary places. And it turned out to be okay because she decided she didn't want to live in Arizona the next year. And so it actually, if she had bought a house, she would have stayed there. So it all kind of worked out in the end. So an errant phrase is another type of message that we can pay attention to. A great one is just this hunch or feeling of deja vu we get when we see something. And I'll give you a great example from my own life. I had started a business a few years ago in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And we couldn't decide on a name for the business. And we went back and forth and we just couldn't figure it out. And so I went home for the holidays to visit my parents in Michigan. And while I was in Michigan, I drove by Ann Arbor, which is the home of the University of Michigan. And I noticed this name on a building that I had never noticed before. And it was the name of a software company. And the name of the company was Arbor Text. And I just had that feeling of deja vu, like this is an important message, a clue that's coming to me. I wasn't sure why. And so I kind of ignored it for the rest of the vacation. And then when I got back to Cambridge, it occurred to me that these guys, whoever started this company, named their company after their college hometown of Ann Arbor. So why don't we name our company after our college hometown of Cambridge? And we did. We called it Cambridge Documents, and it was the first name that all of the founders could agree on, and we really liked it. And so that's an example of following a clue in a certain direction and then saying, what's the next clue? Well, it turned out, in this case, I still had the funny feeling about this company, like there's something about this company that's important. I wasn't sure what it was. So I took the intuition and then decided to follow it up with logical action. And that's where, balancing the head and the heart, I think, are important. I looked up the company. I figured out what they did. And turns out they were an established company in a space similar to ours. And so I contacted the founders. And on my next vacation home to visit my parents, I showed them our product, which they loved. I mean, it took us a while, a year of kind of working together. But eventually, they became our biggest customer and got us into all these big companies that we would never have been able to get into on our own, like Toyota and Boeing and others. And so that's a case where, one, it was an intuitive clue of a funny feeling, and then, two, it was followed up by logical action. I obviously had to show them how our product was going to work with theirs, and then there was a sense of timing because it took about another year, but it worked out quite well for us financially, and they became, like I said, our biggest customer.
Wow.
So that's another type of clue that occurs in the marketplace.
Do we have to be spiritually in tune to recognize these clues, or are they coming from the infinite intelligence out there? I mean, is everything working to our benefit?
Well, I think, things work sometimes to a higher plan that we can't always see. And these clues are like glitches in the matrix, right? They're like hints to us of what this higher order plan might be in our lives. And there's a really famous example of this was with Steve Jobs. When he was younger and in college, he dropped all his classes once. And he decided, while he was wandering around the college town, he saw this poster for a calligraphy class. And he decided to take that class instead of the classes that, his parents were supposed to be paying for that he was supposed to be taking. Didn't seem like a very logical thing to do, and it didn't even seem to have any purpose other than to give him something to do. But it fed his artistic side in drawing all this calligraphy. And then turns out years later, when he was starting Apple Computer and they were building the Macintosh computer, and he said this many times, that if he hadn't taken that calligraphy class, he wouldn't have fell in love with fonts and typefaces, and he wouldn't have insisted like he did that the Macintosh became the first computer with variable fonts and all kinds of different, beautiful fonts, faces, etc. And so it's very possible that for many years we would all have been working with green screens and Courier fonts, right, rather than kind of the rich web as we know it today. if he hadn't just followed his intuition and done something. But it took a long time for that pattern to emerge, right? So I think, you know, sometimes we're drawn to something, or sometimes we see a clue, and we won't know for years later exactly what that means. But I do believe that there is this infinite intelligence that is moving us in certain directions. And sometimes the pattern is clear in retrospect, but it isn't always clear, you know, when you look forward. So you have to learn to connect the dots, and the dots may not connect for a period of time. And, you know, it's important to be okay with that rather than getting frustrated with that.
So can you, sometimes we humans are our own worst enemies. We get in the way. We feel that we know best, and we actually stop the process. So that's where I'm coming from as far as can we trust. When can we let go? When can we start thinking that those signs, those clues are real, that we need to pay attention? When do we let go?
Well, you know, I like to, as I said earlier, balance the logic with the intuition. And clues are general indicators of direction. They say go in this direction. Right? And so I think, you know, we can be mindful of that and start to move in a direction, but don't necessarily commit ourselves until the clue repeats. So we can give the universe conditions sometimes and say, well, you know, that seems like a good idea, but I'm only going to take a little step in that direction. I'm not going to go full out yet. And then I'm going to wait for another clue or something to confirm that this is, in fact, the right timing for me. And that in fact, is the fourth key of manifestation. You know, I talked about three of them. And sometimes it's the most important one, is this element of timing, you know, which may happen over a period of many years. I'll give you another great example, is my own example of my book. I actually wrote the first version of this book, which was the story of the startup and my story about learning about energetic patterns with a mentor, back in 2004. And at that time, I tried to get the book out, but what started to happen, I had clues, some clues, but every time there would be a clue indicating a certain direction, there would then be an obstacle that would come up afterwards. Right? And it happened like clockwork many times in a row. And it started to feel like I was trying to follow the clues, but it was an uphill battle. Right? And so then at some point I had decided, you know what, maybe the timing just isn't right at that point, both for my inner timing, because I was still running a startup day to day and dealing with all kinds of other issues. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily ready to own this idea of Zen and the art of entrepreneurship at the time. I was internally worried about, you know, what will venture capitalists and respectable business people think about me if I'm out there talking about this stuff? And the market wasn't ready either. I mean, we were in the middle of the Iraq war. It was a whole different time. So then last year, I started to get the clues that it was time to really get this book out there. And I took some feedback from people that had read it who loved the book, but they said, you know, it would be nice to have some how-to section. So I added in an element of a workbook and how to apply these things in your lives into the book. And that was sort of the missing piece of the product. My internal timing, you know, now I'm a much more successful entrepreneur. I've had more companies that I've sold, and also I've mentored dozens of other entrepreneurs, so I'm able to see, you know, patterns more broadly now than I was just in my own company. And the market is in a different place. As you said, I think people are looking for more meaningful work. They're looking for careers which are fulfilling, not just, you know, going through the road and making money. And so, you know, last year I started to get those clues, and I said, well, let me take it one step at a time. And I did, and I waited for more clues to emerge, which they did. And then I followed those clues, and also I knew a lot more about consumer marketing now than I ever did back then. Well, when I released this book and launched it in June, it became an international bestseller in like 5 different countries, in like 20 different categories. So I was pretty excited about that, but that's another example of following the clues, letting yourself go in that direction, but not being so attached to the timing, and that even if there are obstacles, there may be a broader pattern at work and there may be a better timing for you in the future.
But you also set your intention telling the universe, give me signs. And
yes, I absolutely did. And I think that's important. You know, by setting your intention on where you'd like to go, and then, you know, kind of getting back into that receiving mode. So sometimes, you know, we get into this mode of projecting, and we can project what we want, but then we have to step back and say, I'm willing to listen, and I'm willing to get suggestions. And, you know, one of the reasons I call the book Zen Entrepreneurship is in the Zen traditions in Japan, there's this idea of of a free-flowing mind or no mind, where you're just kind of in the moment and you're not necessarily doing anything, but you're seeing very clearly what happens. And a lot of the samurai back in medieval times would work with Zen monks because they recognized that that state of mind of being able to see what's going on and receiving and then acting so almost without thought at the right time was an important state of mind. And so it was this blending of the practical, which was a martial art, with the spiritual, which was a state of mind. And I'm not necessarily advocating, you know, I think the war analogy, the violence analogy is a little overdone in business, because, you know, the career warrior is more about your internal struggles that you have with your own fears and your own patterns. But being able to get into that state of mind where we can balance intuition and logic and then act appropriately is pretty important.
You said it. That is great. Now tell us about Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan, and what do they have to do with the career success?
Sure. So in the book, I actually talk about Castaneda, who, again, this story took place in the early 90s, so I had grown up in the 80s, and I hadn't even heard of Carlos Castaneda or Don Juan. And so the book is written, you know, in this case where I'm the one starting the business, and there's a teacher, a mentor, a Don Juan type of figure, who is showing me the ropes in terms of how to apply these principles and how to examine my own life. So on the one hand, I use the paradigm of the Castaneda books. On the other hand, you know, Castaneda once said that an ordinary person sees everything as a blessing or a curse, whereas a warrior sees everything as a challenge. And I think that's an important mindset that I like to bring into the world of work. And then finally, you know, Castaneda, you've probably read some of his books, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
And they're very interesting and go into all kinds of dimensions and states of mind. But really, there's, you know, a couple of key skills that he keeps emphasizing again and again, which are the skills of the occult skills of stalking, dreaming, and seeing.
Okay, I got to get into those. Stalking.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
So stalking is, you know, he again took it from the Don Juan teaches Carlos to adopt the mind of a hunter stalking its prey, which might be an animal or it might be something totally different that you're after. But really what stalking means is to rearrange your energy field into a certain configuration so that you can go along a certain path and achieve a certain goal. It's kind of like acting, but not really. Because acting is just acting. In stalking, you're actually adopting the mindset, the behavior of that which you're trying to achieve. And so that is one of the skills that he talks about. And in the book, I talk about applying that to stalking the company that can raise money from investors. And so, you know, to do that, I had to go from being just an engineer, which is my background, I'm a computer programmer by background, to being somebody that can present a business plan and present how this business is going to grow in a set of language and with a set of motifs that investors in the venture capital world would understand. And they have a whole language of their own, and they have a whole way of looking at the world and looking at trends, which isn't always obvious to an engineer or anybody else who's getting into that world. And so in the book, I talk about stalking $1 million, which was this process of raising money for the company. But really, the skill of stalking is becoming – that somebody that can go along a certain path, but doing it without necessarily, you know, giving up your authentic self. So I think we need to bring all of these things together.
So you mean intense focusing?
Intense focusing, but also adopting the behavior that you need to be successful in that market, and whatever market it is that you are going after. So for example, you may decide, you know, I'd like to make a $100 million Hollywood blockbuster film, right? Well, if you've never made a film before, nobody's going to give you $100 million. It doesn't matter how hard you visualize to make a big blockbuster film, right?
Right.
But if you look at kind of the trajectory that people have followed in the film world, you can say, well, the way to make a $100 million film and get somebody to give you that is to make a $10 million film that's successful. Right? And the way to make a $10 million film that's successful is to make a $1 million film. Right, and so you actually build up your skill set, and you start to use the terminology that people in the film industry would use, so that you can adapt the role of somebody that they can trust to give you not just adopt, but actually become somebody that they would feel comfortable giving you this kind of money to make a film. So that's what I mean by stalking, is stalking whatever it is that you want to become, and adopting the mindset and the behaviors and the language that will help you to be successful.
Mm. Good. Now, so what about dreaming?
Well, dreaming is actually a very interesting area for me personally. And I talk a lot about it in the book. And, you know, I mentioned earlier about, life consisting mostly of work and sleep. Well, if we can use our work as meditation, can we use our sleep also as a way to help with further our spiritual growth? And there are many traditions that talk about the importance of dreams, because it's such a universal experience, right? Everybody dreams. And there have probably been more books written on dreams than any other subject in human history. And Carl Jung, the psychologist, used to say, when people asked him what he looks for in people's dreams, he said that he looks to find what a man or woman is preparing themselves for in life. And I think that's very powerful, because there's a lot of messages that can come into us through dreams. In Tibetan dream yoga and in some of the Native American traditions, they like to separate dreams into two kinds of dreams, like ordinary, everyday dreams, which the Tibetans call karmic trace dreams, and then big dreams, or dreams of clarity, where there is real spiritual guidance, real wisdom coming through to us that is part of our path in life, you know, which a lot of the shamans would say that, you know, if you have a dream like that, you're having a shamanic initiation in the dream state. But it could just be a set of messages that come through in the dreams state that help you go a certain way, and that's one of the seven types of clues. I'll give you an example in my own life. I had, going back to one of the startups that I was involved with, we were trying to figure out what product to build, and I had this dream where I ended up in this generic business conference. And this was after the dot-com bubble burst back in 2000. So I was trying to decide, you know, what kind of company to start next. And in this dream, I saw all these people that I had known back in the 90s during the dot-com days, and I started to ask them, what are you working on? What are you working on? What are you working on? And all gave you the same answer, which was this particular technology. And then one of them showed me a brochure of a product which looked like a spider, which had this technology in the middle. It was connecting together all these documents and systems. And, you know, I woke up, and it was one of those dreams where I didn't have to write it down because I would remember it, right? There was a certain quality to it. And we ended up making a product that looked very much like that brochure with that technology at the middle with a spider. And that was an example of a dream of clarity, which gave me a direction. And it didn't even need to be interpreted. Now, most dreams do need some level of interpretation, but that one didn't. And the clearer the dream is, you know, the less interpretation that's required. And the clearer that our mind is during the day, if our mind is frazzled, or if we have, like, the snow globe analogy, you know, thousands of thoughts that are flying all over the place, then it's likely that our dreams are going to be very disjointed and frazzled and hard to remember, let alone interpret. But as we clear our minds, we're cooling our energy fields, those imperfections that I talked about earlier, that leads to the emergence of what Castaneda calls the dreaming attention, and what in the Tibetan traditions they call the dreaming body, which lets us travel in that state, you know, and visit places and get messages that are more about our physical reality than just regurgitations of stuff that we have seen during the day.
Yeah, interesting. And so really, today is all about combining the spiritual side and the success side. Can you actually be successful if you're not happy doing what you're doing?
Right. I think that's, you know, one of the major problems that we run into in life. And people ask me about that, and I say, you know, you really need to find the intersection of three spheres in life. And the first of those spheres is what you want and what you love to do. But the second of those spheres is what you're good at, you know, things that come naturally to you, what your natural inclinations are. And the third sphere is what the market needs. And if you focus on only one of those spheres, on what the market needs, you might be successful financially, but you'll be very unhappy. If you try to go after something you really want, but you have no natural talent for it, you're going to end up frustrated. Like, I may decide I want to be a basketball player, but you know what? I'm only 5'6", not that athletic. I'm a better computer programmer than I am a basketball player, so I'm probably not going to make it to the NBA. But if you can find the intersection of those three spheres, I believe you can be happy and successful. And that's, you know, that is in fact what the book is about.
Wow, that is great. Now, please tell people how they can go about getting your book, Zen Entrepreneurship.
Sure. So the book is available on Amazon, but the easiest thing to do is to go to my website, which is zenentrepreneur.com.
Or do a search for Rizwan, R-I-Z-W-A-N, Virk, V-I-R-K. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this wonderful information with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciated it and enjoyed it.
And to all my wonderful listeners, have a great week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com. And have a great week.